Hey kids, Future Mike here in the Edit Bay 9000. You're about to hear past me have an amazing discussion with our friend Ashley about her contributions to Thy Geekdom Come Volume 2 from the folks at Mythos & Inc. I don't want to spend too much time gilding the lily, as I do go over a lot of what it is, how we're partnering with them, and that sort of thing. But I did get to the end of our recording and realized that I never actually gave the link to check out a free preview of Volume 2, as well as some content from folks across the geeky Christian interwebs. When you're done listening to this, make your way over to geekdevo.com/bardenbible to find all of that, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. Tell them Future Mike sent you. Now that we've got that taken care of, I'm going to head over to the bar and listen myself. Hey, give me one of anything that comes in a pint. Hello and well met, weary traveler. This is Mike Perna, your resident dwarf bard, and this is... All right, let's just drop the edifice. This is not the keeper. This is regular old Mike Perna, because we are doing a special edition. You will be hearing the regular edition of Bard and Bible coming out very soon. This is one of the ones that surprised me. Like, I started reading it and I'm like, oh, I know what, how I'm going to do this. And then God said, ha! No, you're going to read this story and it's going to hit you in a different way. So be excited about that one. But, one of the things that we've been doing is if you might've noticed my intro last episode, and you will hear for a little bit more, we've been partnering up with our folks at Mythos & Inc. And we are supporting Thy Geekdom Come Volume 2. And as part of that, because it's fun when your promotions, you actually know the guy who's setting up the promotion with you, because then I can look at him and go, look, man, can I do this my way instead of just doing, you know, ad copy, which is very fun. And it's why you have Benny doing his side hustle as my introduction, as opposed to, you know, just randomly me reading ad copy. So I said that one of the things I could do is that I know a number of your contributors. And so how about I just do interview episodes and do something, because of the fact that Thy Geekdom Come does geeky devotionals that basically, like, here's this cool geek story, let's relate it to biblical truth. I go, that's kind of my wheelhouse. And so I said, let's just talk to them. And so I have, let's see. I feel like I don't need to introduce her because of the fact that you know who she is. Because let's see. She is the voice of Lieutenant Commander Astrid Woadborn. She is the reason that it's referred to as the Mauer's Library at the Bard and Bible. She is literally the introductory class of the Wandering Bards Guild. She is the first recording that you'd hear in the first class of the Wandering Bards Guild. It's Ashley Mowers from the Min Max Podcast. Ashley, how are you doing?
I'm doing great after those accolades. Thank you.
Well, it's true. I realize I'm like, wow, like Ashley's actually shown up quite a bit, but it's always been in stuff that I don't introduce anybody to. It's like you were a voice on the Good Orc. Mm-hmm. Which only got a credit at the end. Sure. You were in the Wandering Bards Guild, and they, unless you read the show notes, which, come right. on, how many people actually read podcast show notes? Unless you read the show notes, there was no introduction. You just started.
That's true. I was just like, you don't need to know my name. Yeah. It doesn't matter who I am.
So I'm like, I wanted to point these things out. Ashley has been to the Bard and Bible for quite a while.
And when you saw one set of footprints, that's when I was telling you a story.
Sand people walk single file to hide their numbers. And that's actually going to be tied into what we're talking about. Okay, so Ashley is a contributor of Thy Geekdom Come. We will get to that. But before that, in the off chance that you have no idea what she does, Ashley, tell the good people a little bit about you, about what you do, why somebody would be calling you to say, hey, write nerd stuff about God.
Sure. So as you just said, I'm one of the three co-hosts on the MinMax podcast. That's a nerd and Christian theology podcast that I started with my husband, Alan, and our really close friend, Kyle. Kyle and I went to seminary together. And then after seminary, I ended up teaching public speaking and performing arts for a bit. And then I traveled all the way to Scotland because I'm an idiot to get a second master's degree, because only idiots, I'm telling you right now, this is no cap, as the children say, only the stupid get a second master's degree. There is no reason why you should necessitate a second master's degree.
I have been asked a number of occasions if I would get a second one. And I said, there are a couple topics that it would be interesting to study that I haven't yet. Like, I know that there's a master's in storytelling. That exists.
Yeah.
I would love to get that. I'm never going to put in the time, effort, and money that it takes to get that piece of paper.
Right. Because after a while, it's just pride. Like, yep. It is just narcissism. Because you like cluttering your wall with paper that says you've mastered things.
Yep.
Which isn't intent why I went for it, but I had studied art and theology, which has really largely informed the work that I do on the MinMax podcast, and then now in the devotional world and in ministry, because now I work as a communications director for a church here in Tennessee, where Alan and I ended up, and that has really sort of influenced the way that I do communications, because so much of nerd culture is community building, which is so critical, and storytelling. You know, you're telling the story of a church and how it started and what these people are like. So, you know, nerd culture and church culture are so similar that there's a lot of tie-in. You just have to convince the two groups that they're similar.
Right, which is a feat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I will clarify that. It's a feat if you want to do it with any kind of depth.
Yes.
I know. Yeah. I know lots of, well, on the nerd side, there's a lot of tropes that are found, like, especially if you watch anime, you'll find religious imagery all over there. And some of it's actually accurate. But, and then like churches love anything that's going to get people in seats. Churches mm-hmm. are going to, but if with any kind of depth of the nerd and the church combined, that's work.
Yeah, yeah, because you have to take a bit on the church end. You have to take a bit to explain to people that you can't just host a game night and call it a day, or you can't just, you know, befriend some people and say, "Oh, nice costume," and say that you appreciate cosplay. Right. Like you have to spend the time, and that's a lot of the thing that people who are unfamiliar with the culture just aren't equipped to do or aren't prepared to do.
Well, have you heard this? Especially because I've moved to a new area.
Yeah.
Like I had a pretty settled setup there in New Jersey where people knew what we were about. But now that we're here and we're talking to new people and more people, mm-hmm. Church culture around here, like, they're like, "Oh, I didn't even notice that was a culture."
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. No, dude, there's a thing.
Right. Yeah. You spend, you know, a collective 20 minutes on the internet, you'll find something.
Mm-hmm.
Spit and you'll hit it.
Yeah.
But that's just it. If you've been cloistered or you've been, you know, within your own spheres for so long, you won't see it. You have to point it out. And then once they see it, they'll see it everywhere.
Right.
But it's a matter of pointing it out first. And so that's largely what I've been doing, has been pointing out various cultures that I see that have been built largely on social media platforms, and said, you know, the whole internet is not bad. There are pockets, certainly, but it's a tool that you utilize. And here are some people that are utilizing it really well for good reasons.
Right.
Now, how can we emulate that? And so once they see that value, they relax a bit, and then they start to open up about other things that they used to do. And that's the thing that I find the most fascinating, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. are the people that are like, "Oh yeah, I used to play D&D, or "Oh yeah, I used to watch anime," or, you know, "Oh, I loved The Lord of the Rings when I was a kid. Why did I stop reading that?" And they start to thaw a bit, because I think they initially expect me to find their anecdotes humorous in a way that, like, we're both laughing at their younger self, like how dumb they were. Yeah. And when they realize I appreciate it, they're surprised. And then we start talking more. And that's the main reason why I love nerd culture so much, is because I feel like you see people thaw for once in it at the best of times.
Oh yeah.
And you start to experience something far deeper than the public face that they put on, which we all do. Like, none of us are none of us are sort of kept from that behavior. But I really love being able to see people outside of their public selves.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, that's something that I've discovered too. Like, I still tell the story of when the first time I ran, this is long before Inroads was even a concept, and I was running a D&D game for my crew of the youth group, which is basically, I had the nerds and the homeschool kids.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is my tribe. And so I was running a D&D game for them, and the one girl who was in the group, her dad was the executive pastor. And like, I'd known him for a good long while at this point, but like, we never talked about this. So as anybody who blurs the lines between these stuff and church culture and nerd stuff, there's always like the, are you going to be okay with this? Or are you going to be the ones that I'm going to have long, awkward conversations with? He kind of leaned over, and he's a very tall man, and I'm sitting there at the table, and he leans over and he goes, back when I was playing, we used to have, I'm like, yes.
That's the best feeling.
Yes. He used to tell me about this game. I can't remember the title of it, but it was basically, it was aerial dogfighting. And you like each plane had like a flip book, and depending on what page you were on in the flip book and what move you did, you had different, I'm like, that sounds awesome, and I want to be playing that.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to find that for Alan. He would be into that in a big way. But that's just it, right? Like, when I've talked about the tabletop games and I've talked about various features in nerd culture, you know, people, I can hear them listening very closely, because they're waiting to hear you reintroduce the shame that they've put on themselves throughout the years, for whatever reason, whatever they've heard from culture that they've decided, oh, this is a shameful thing. And once they don't get that from you, they very tentatively sort of like test the ice and see, you know, if they admit to something, how that's received. So when they find that it's received with excitement and love and genuine joy, then you can start opening up and talking about other things. And I just think that's a really beautiful moment when they test that ice, like that guy just did in your story, and shares that. And then you learn so much else about them.
Well, and you talk about, you know, taking away the shame of it too, because like, I still love bringing out, there's a fact that it's kind of changed slightly because statistics will.
Sure.
But it's still pretty close to the way it is. Whenever we're talking like, oh, video games are for kids. And I go,
yeah,
the most popular demographic for playing video games is women in their mid 30s.
Yep.
And they're like, what? I said, do you have a phone app right now?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? That's a video game.
Yeah.
Like, yes, there is a certain subset of video games that are more than likely populated by a certain demographic, that the one that you're not a fan of.
Yeah.
I said, but to say that's all of video games is misleading. Let me explain to you that it is okay. And then all of a sudden, when they realize it's okay,
yeah,
then it's opening a floodgate.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to get, you know, I don't want Kyle to be mad at me. I do want to make sure we get to Thy Geekdom Come. I can push it a little bit, but I can't push it that hard. Let's talk about what you wrote for Thy Geekdom Come. You actually did two in this volume.
Yeah. They had asked me to do a third, but I had just started my new job, and I was like, I would love to. However, I have to be responsible.
I can't do three well. I can't do three well.
That was exactly it. I was like, it really hurts me to have to say no to this, but if I'm going to be responsible, I better. So yeah, I did two. I did the first one that I pitched to them was This Is the Way, Devotion Like the Mandalorians, which really came from the gut, frankly. We were in the middle of recognizing that we weren't going to be able to stay in the UK as long as we had originally planned on. And we'd been watching The Mandalorian, and it came, you know, that the comfort of that show came at exactly the right time. And I was also wrestling with We'll just call it like it is. I really deeply hated somebody, frankly. I was really angry. I was very upset about something this person did. And I was struggling with how to hold to my faith while acknowledging that I hated this person. And at the time, I was unwilling to admit that I hated them. I was just like, no, I'm just very angry by their behavior.
Because changing the verbiage is going to make everything so much better.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Gosh darn it.
That's exactly it. And so in the process of watching The Mandalorian and seeing Mando have to take on the child and being tasked with acting as surrogate father to something that is meant to be in enmity with the Mandalorians, or at least this sect of the Mandalorians, that really impacted me in a big way. And I've always been a huge fan of Matthew 5. I kind of always in the back of my head have the Sermon on the Mount going through my head as I try to conduct myself in a Christ-like manner. And so you can imagine it was so incredibly difficult to be wrestling through Matthew 5, something I'm very familiar with at this point, while also acknowledging the fact, oh, I've been hating this person for a while now.
Yeah.
And that's been eking out in my conduct towards them, which I'm sure does not help any sort of reconciliation that could occur, let alone the hope of reconciliation. And it really helped me, you know, lay down my verbal weaponry and recognize that that person was a child of God, regardless of whether how badly they hurt me or not, that I could not forget, if I wanted to still call myself a Christian, I could not forget that they were a child of God first and foremost, before they were ever my enemy.
So amazing how just that simple understanding changes a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really was, you know, that point where I'm sitting there writing this and feeling really, really good about it. And I'm like, oh, now I have to apply this to myself. I hate that part. You know,
man, application, man. Why we got to do the application part?
Right. And I always try to make it a point whenever I'm writing a devotional or sermon that I'm writing it first and foremost to myself, before I'm ever writing something that I think should be applied to somebody else. And I think that's critical. But I also really hate that process of recognizing where in my walk I've really fallen and identifying that enough to really call myself out is not fun at all.
When you want to write something that's challenging to people, then you realize, oh, wait, I'm people.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So I'd been processing a lot about what it looked like to be in enmity with somebody, especially, you know, generations of enmity just like piled on top of one another over and over and over again. So to undo that, beginning with one relationship, and that relationship being begun not because the outside is forcing it from you, not because the call is coming externally, but because your own faith in this case is saying, this is our creed. I don't know what you expected, but we've been saying this for years. Now you got to do it. It's not just something fun you get to say every once in a while because it makes us look good. You actually have to apply it.
That's actually a recurring theme in a lot of, at least my interactions with people. I find myself going, oh, wait, that thing that you've been saying since I was a kid. Wait. That's the thing that actually has, you know, ramifications in the way I do things.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so I love seeing Mando go through and basically relearn his faith as he goes through various trials. He's no longer a party of one. He no longer just gets to act based off of his needs. He has to act on the needs of Grogu as well, or Grogu, sorry. And, you know, teach him really basic things like don't eat other species' eggs.
Yeah.
Maybe don't run after this.
Don't commit genocide.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just horrifying. But really acting on the part of father, not just as a make sure he stays alive, but make sure he becomes somebody that is upstanding and has, you know, he's in the process of imparting his own culture to this being that is at odds with his way of life. And I find that nothing brings two people more closely than when we share our cultures and faith with one another in a way that encourages us to adopt those ways.
Right.
I just found it really, that first season I found really lovely. It was one of those things where you watch it and it just doesn't leave you alone after a while.
Right.
It's not just some passing sort of form of entertainment. It really sticks with you. So when I'd seen the call for submissions, I was like, I know exactly what I'm writing about. I'm going to hate myself for it, but we got to do this.
We're going to walk down this road for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that wasn't, and just to kind of go to the broad spectrum stuff, like mm-hmm. one, you need to get this book and read this devotional. It's good. But kind of, you know, even pulling out from that, there are other things that like Mando has. And I want to just bring out the fact that there's lots of things that if you're looking, you will find them. Because mm-hmm. that's something that we do at Barden Bible all the time. It's like all this stuff has always been part of these stories. Like the stuff I do at Barden Bible isn't new. I'm not even the first one doing it. Mm-hmm. Like it's always been there. It's just we don't acknowledge it. We don't see it. And so I do kind of every once in a while when it strikes me, and it strikes me with Mando, to pull out the fact that there are other stories. There's lots of stories here and mm-hmm. lots of moments that lead to this devotional thought. Like the idea that I was fascinated by just the little Mando. I can't remember what they call it, like the group of them that are there in the town.
Sure. Yeah.
Whatever the group name is. I forget. It's been a while since I watched it. call Kyle. it's really interesting to see if for me, a lot of correlation with the idea of how that crew functions mm-hmm. with the way so many of us end up kind of doing church. Because if you think about it, that crew hated each other.
Yeah.
There's that very intense moment of who are you walking into a place with this much Beskar?
Yeah.
Like, who are you? We need to be, they were literally about ready to kill each other in that mm-hmm. moment.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times we end up doing that. Like we're in that place. Like we can't stand each other. We don't acknowledge that because it's what we talk about after Sunday when we go home and have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But like that, but at the same point, even with that isolation, there is this collective understanding of, no, brother man getting attacked, we're here for this.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you notice, the dude who is about ready to kill him in that tunnel is also one of the first dudes who's there to make sure that he's not getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's a really interesting dynamic to figure that out. Like there is some such a thing as a corporate identity and understanding of even if I got problem with you right now, you are still my people and I right. will make sure that you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think especially, go ahead.
It is just the idea of I can kill you. They can't.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's funny. Cause, I was talking with some friends and we were just comparing notes about our denominations, and someone made a joke, I think, about Episcopalianism, and me and the other Episcopalian in the room, we were both like, whoa, 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 whoa. We can make fun of our denomination. You can't. That's like making fun of our mothers.
Right.
Like we can make a joke about our mom. You cannot. And that's what it feels like at church sometimes. Like when it's done, you know, reasonably well, you do have that familial bond with people. And I think that's what's comforting about church is knowing that you can show up at your absolute worst and no one's going to kick you out.
Right.
And you'll still have beef with people, on occasion because it's church and it's intimate and it's messy, but
anything that involves people will eventually break down into that.
Right, exactly. But at the end of the day, like you said, you're my people. I'm going to have your back. I think the thing that can get really tricky sometimes, and we see this in The Mandalorian, is when we become so tight-knit that we start strong-arming other people from our group for fear of it changing.
Well, and then, hey, guess what? Season 2 comes along.
Exactly.
And there you see that. Oh, oh, you're with that sect.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I love that moment. And it's funny because, like you'd mentioned, Kyle, our other co-host on MinMax, he's a massive Star Wars fan.
I thought I knew about Star Wars, and then Kyle started talking.
Right, exactly. And so as soon as the devotional came out, I was like, oh no, I didn't clear this with Kyle. I'm screwed. Luckily, he liked it, thank God. But he was talking about that with The Mandalorian, how he's like, there's just something off about this group of Mandalorian. I don't know what's going on, but there's something not right. And then the second season rolled around and he had the exact same reaction. He was like, that's it. I knew it. I knew there was something wrong.
There is something wrong with me. They're the weirdos.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But regardless, I do really love particularly the armorer.
I have much love for the armorer.
Yeah. Well, and I just love how she conducts herself, kind of like this high priestess, where she's taking, you know, the Beskar and smelting it and creating this armor, and you know, every time she does show, talking about their faith ultimately, and referring to it as the way, is not lost on me.
Right.
It shouldn't be lost on anybody.
Oh, trust me, the number of cheesy Christian t-shirts that says this is the way, trust me, nobody lost that one.
Right, exactly. But particularly her quote that I opened my Devo with, a foundling is in your care by creed until it is of age or reunited with its own kind. You are its father.
Right.
This is the way. And as soon as she said that, I was like, oh, the Beatitudes. Yeah. And I like ran for my Bible.
Oh, Bible stuff.
Right. Exactly. And I got so excited. And that was even before, you know, that was even before they had a call for submissions for the devotional. So then when I saw it, I was like, I know what I'm doing. but I just thought that that was really beautiful because she's clearly of the old guard. She has been carrying these traditions and these creeds her entire life and seeing and training others to do so. So for her to be the first to say, no, this is what we do. I understand that this is our enemy, but you're going to take care of them, and you're going to not only take care of them like a guard, you're going to be family.
Right.
And you're bound together. It was just incredible. It was just really incredible. And I really hope that when people read that particular devotional, that they start looking at their neighbors and their enemies with more care and recognizing God in them. And figuring out ways that they can demonstrate that sort of familial love towards them in ways that they might not have been. Because I think once you start looking at people that way, you just see opportunities for the Holy Spirit to move in ways that you might have been close to previously. Not to get like too preachy or anything. Right. That's just, you know, the more people you meet and the more you open yourself up to, this is a child of God that is in front of me. That just, that hits, it hits different.
Yeah, definitely. I do, from Mando, I had a lot of connection to Mando.
Sure.
So when I read that one, I'm like, yes, I am feeling this one. But I also want to commend you for your skill, because the only connection I have to She-Ra is back in the day, in the early days of He-Man and She-Ra, when they were basically glorified toy commercials.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. As much a proponent as I am that you will find God in these places, if you look, I don't know if you're going to find it in a glorified toy commercial. So I've heard lovely, wonderful things about the experience of watching the Netflix She-Ra, which is what you wrote about.
Right.
I have no connection to it, and I still was fascinated by your devotional. So
thank you.
bring forth what this is.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Okay. So yeah. So I grew up with the original toy commercial She-Ra as well. We basically had two VHSs of She-Ra at the local library where I grew up. And so that was originally my introduction to She-Ra. And I loved her because she was a pretty princess that had a sword. And, you know, there was nothing I wanted more than to be pretty and be a princess and have a sword. I didn't want to be like the other princesses. I wanted to beat stuff up, but I wanted to look cool doing it. And so she was everything I wanted to be. And so then when the new She-Ra was premiered, I was really excited because I felt like everything that I loved about the original She-Ra was highlighted and emphasized in the new She-Ra. And the things that I wanted to highlight that I really saw in the show that I thought they included and added in a really beautiful way was specifically that sense of belonging. And we kind of talked about in Mando. So clearly I have a theme. I just like to variate on those things.
I don't know if you realize this, but I think scripture kind of has a theme.
Yeah, that's true. And so that sense of belonging and recovery from trauma, especially, I think is huge in She-Ra. Because you've got Adora coming from a very particular so it's another adoption story in a way. You know, she's taken and she's adopted into this really abusive community that is indoctrinating her to function against another people group. And she, you know, her closest friend in that community is Catra, who looks at Adora lovingly, but also with a great deal of envy because of the success she has in sort of she has in fitting into that way of life and the success and the treatment that she gets. So then when Adora leaves, Catra feels ultimately betrayed, which I think everyone can relate to in some way or another, you know, feeling envious of someone's skill and then feeling like you're being betrayed by that person. And they're using those very skills that they were celebrated for in the complete opposite direction of what they'd been trained for in the first place. So you've been given the same resources, but then using them in a way that it goes against your right. ultimate intent. And I really loved the development of Catra as a character because there's so much she's going through and she goes through so much trauma. She's not only indoctrinated originally with the Horde, but then to then go through this really horrifying baptismal ritual and be microchipped and brainwashed to be able to harm the one that she loves the most in Horde Prime's name. It was so chilling. Like I've now gotten to the point where animation, I think a lot of people have a hard time initially coming out of the idea that animation is just for kids.
They really do.
Yeah.
And I have many, many things to show them that prove that that's not the case.
Right. Exactly. And even She-Ra, you know, presented initially, it's like, yeah, this is really lighthearted and fun and very sort of just childlike. This is a typical sort of, you know, hero story. But it really grew up in the last season where you're sitting there going, this is chilling. This is absolutely chilling. You know, I got very tense watching the story arc in which Catra stays with Horde Prime, is baptized in this like really horrific looking liquid, and basically stripped of her identity. Any identity, any sort of growth that she's had is just removed. All in the name of becoming pure. And so that idea that all of her impulses, everything that made her Catra, every sort of identifying, you know, qualifier that she embodied is stripped to make her more appealing and cooperative for that group. I was like, wow, that sounds familiar. That sounds really uncomfortably familiar.
Where have I heard this before?
Yeah, exactly. And so writing about this baptismal ritual and how much it, what Horde Prime does perverts everything that I love about actual Christian baptism in a really effective way. You know, Noel Stevenson is one of the best TV writers, I think, of our time. She's incredible. And so this opportunity to show what, show what a lot of really unhealthy churches have done to people, especially to the LGBTQ plus community with conversion therapy and conversion camps and stuff, I think is a really critical conversation. And so what Noel did to research not only, you know, really conservative evangelical culture, but also to study the architecture of those mega churches and to make Horde Prime ship look like those mega churches. It was just such an incredible point of detail that they included in their show. It really moved me, and it reminded me of times in which, and I've never had to go through something nearly as traumatizing, but the times that I'd been a part of churches where I was instructed to, and because I wanted to be teachable, you know, cooperated with the stripping of my own, what I had learned through school, my own identity as far as anything that I loved to do or the people I loved to associate with, in order to quote unquote stay teachable and to be able to participate and feel loved by God, which is really the most dastardly thing to suggest, that unless you stay cooperative, that God won't love you, or right, that you are somehow disappointing God. Because it was, that's the thing too, was the way that some of this had, the way that I had experienced just even like a fraction of some of this, wasn't so much that I was afraid of the hell and, you know, fire and brimstone in the sermons. It was the idea that that God would be absent from me, that right, God would choose to turn away from me, as I so desperately sought him out, in everything that I did already, really, really impacted me for a while. And it wasn't until we had left that congregation that I realized, looking back, how much I had just put away, in order to be cooperative. And I think a lot of people do that because they see people that they like. You know, it's not like it's happening to you in a vacuum. You're a part of a community. You grow to love these people. And I still do. Like, mm-hmm, there's still people that I love and I want good things for.
Right.
You never stop loving those people.
Right.
But to love them from a distance, I think, can be a very healthy choice for others that I don't think everybody realizes they can do.
Right. I actually ended up leaving one church I worked at because of that. I was the outreach guy. I believe it was outreach coordinator was my official title.
Yeah.
It was the church I grew up in faith in. It was not the church I grew up in, but the one that really solidified a lot of my faith, and I wanted to come out of seminary and work for them. But like, it was just I came out like, let's do this. Let's connect with people in the community. We don't do that. I go, I know, that's why you hired me. And I kept hitting wall after wall after wall. I go, this is why this needs to happen. This is how we can connect to the community. This is, and it was just wall after wall after wall. And then eventually they're like, we want you to keep working for us, but we can't pay you anymore. And yep. I didn't tell them, I was very polite to them as they were talking to me, but I literally in the back of my mind are going, I love you people. I'm going to leave now because I want to keep loving you people.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. That's such a good example of what I'm trying to talk about is that, and there's no reason Catcher should ever love Horde Prime. Like, they're dastardly. No, they're awful. It's a good thing that they're gone forever.
Like there are some villains that are just villains.
Right. Exactly. But we have that choice. And I think so often the churches that Stevenson was reflecting on, they present it as if you have no choice. It's either us or them. And that's right. It. And granted, the community that we left, they might still think in those terms of, well, they left and chose them, not us. And I'm sad by that. I'm saddened by that. But, you know, I still pray for them. Like, I still mm-hmm. desperately want them to experience God, even if their experience of God, I would find conflict with, because there are traditions that I just can't participate in, that if they're still experiencing God honestly, truthfully, then I want them to have that experience of God, because there's nothing bad in God.
Right.
You know, but I have to, you know, my journey with God is taking me elsewhere, and that's also important for me to pursue. I can't keep confining God to this box that you've created.
Well, I know that was, for me, that was an interesting part. Like, I could not say at any degree that I went through, because it's now like a term. I can't say I went through like a deconstruction of my faith in the terms that anyone has ever used. I've never been to that point.
Yeah, same.
But something that did happen was that I went to a church that was a very specific type of church.
Mm-hmm.
So all my faith, all my other than the basic storytelling, because, man, the church I grew up in, I'm not even going to talk about it because I can't say nice things about it.
Yeah.
But the church that I grew up in my faith, like, that was a very specific type of church. And then I went to a college that was also that very specific type. And then I went to a seminary that, if you can follow me here, mm-hmm. was also that very specific type.
Yeah.
And so in each case, I always thought, I'm just growing.
Mm.
I'm just growing, and this is what reality is. This is what truth is. I'm just growing. And then it was probably a couple years after seminary where I started to be impacted by people who weren't in that box.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was never a deconstruction. I never said, this is garbage. Like, I still hold to a lot of what that box gave me.
Right.
But the one thing that that box never specifically taught me, but kind of indirectly taught me, was that this, if you're following truth, this is what you follow.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that anybody else is either cherry picking the scriptures, or they're going by emotion first, and I'm just sitting there, and you know, when that's all you know, and these people that you greatly respect say, oh, those people just aren't doing it right, you go, oh, okay, so we are doing it right? Excellent.
Yeah.
And it's when I started connecting to people, like, let alone now anymore, like, because of my work with Inroads, I've connected with people literally in every Christian denomination. I mean, I say literally, but that's in the figurative sense, because there are so freaking many of them. There's so many flavors. But for like every major Christian denomination, like large scale, I probably know somebody in this ministry that is tied to that church,
mm-hmm.
let alone all the people from other faiths, all the people who know faith, all the people who have like, and I sit there, I go, okay, you and I have a different understanding of how this works. How did you get to the figure of how this works? And again, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, oh, well, they're going to fall on their emotions, or they're going to do this. Because all the things that I was told, that people either believe this or don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, you've actually done more homework than I have.
Yeah.
You've actually prayed about this longer than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you came up to a different position on this. Huh. It's not just you study, you do the work, you get to our results, or not. Like, yeah. It's people can study bring in their stuff, bring in history's stuff, bring in traditional stuff, bring in all this other things. And the thing that I realized was that I was totally taught like solo scriptura. That's, you do that. Mm-hmm. And I realized that only works if you can completely divorce all that other stuff from your reading of scripture, and you can't.
Right. Exactly.
And it wasn't until seminary that I had anybody who taught me anything tell me, you will always read scripture through bias.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get away from it. You just have to be able to identify it and understand that what you read will always flow through that.
Mm-hmm.
But bringing it back to what you're saying here is that when you do that, when you open that up, that it's not just the people doing it right and the people doing stupid, frivolous silliness.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who are coming to very learned, very understood, very, you know, seeking after God processes. We just came up to different ends, and you realize that we're all just trying to figure this out and to be able to process that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting. I always love hearing the story of other people's faith journey, because I, for so long, felt really weird about mine, because I wasn't raised in a particularly evangelical culture. The town that I grew up in, you're pretty much either Catholic or Missouri Synod Lutheran. And then we actually went to the weird church because we were ELCA Lutheran. So
yeah,
we had a soprano saxophone and lemon squares, so we were fancy.
I love that.
and they, you know, considering it was a really small country church, they did a really good job forming us as kids. Like they were pretty great about trying to translate these really heady theological concepts for the very small, you know, little group that we had of kids. And then I, you know, we tried a few other churches in my teens for various reasons. One being, in a small town, you know, and your dad's a cop, it's hard to go to church.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows everybody.
Yep.
Right. And so we tried about a few other churches, and then I went to college, and the college I went to was an American Baptist college university. And that was the first time I ever met Baptists, because I didn't know what they were previously, because all I knew was Catholic or Lutheran.
Or Lutheran.
Right? And American Baptists ordained women very gratefully. So there wasn't really anything at odds with what I believed for a while, until I started meeting more like conservative sects of Baptist and evangelical.
Other Baptists, yeah.
Basically, yeah, ultimately. And the first time that I really felt like, oh, I've been sitting here sort of absorbing this for a long time, and I really need to wake myself up out of this reverie and start to defend myself a little bit more, was when I told basically my cohort in my department, hey, I'm going to be going to seminary. And one of the guys in the cohort said, why? You don't need that to be a church secretary. And it, like,
dang.
Yeah. And it wasn't from somebody that I anticipated that response to. And in fact, I told them, because it never occurred to me that that's something that somebody would say to me. And I was so shocked, I didn't know what to say. And then, of course, I beat myself up later for not saying anything, because I was just so stunned that that could come from one of my peers. That's how insulated I was from that attitude. And then I went to seminary, but we were attending a church that didn't acknowledge that I was doing anything that could apply to the work they were doing. And they tried to defend it, saying, you know, you can't lead worship from the drums, which we all know is nonsense. But
let me point you to kind of a group called the Eagles.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But again, it was because I was so loyal to specific people that I wanted to see thrive, that I kept telling myself, I kept justifying it. Like, you're here to serve these people. You don't have to be in front to serve God. You know, love these people and empower the women in the ways that you can while you're here. Well, again, if you're within a group of people for long enough, you start to just adopt their ways of doing things. And yep. so I stopped asking questions openly and just turned to books and isolating until the point I was so isolated that every time we left church, I cried on the way back home. Because I wasn't actually known by anybody. I was just kind of a caricature of what they thought sort of a lost, you know, feminist was.
Right.
When I wouldn't have even thought of myself as particularly, particularly left at that time. Now they probably would be like, see, we told you. And I'm like, well, you know, but at the time I was probably like the most cooperative and most pliable, as I would have ever been. Jokes on them, I guess. But it saddens me to look back on who I was and see how much I had beaten myself up about not fitting something that I would have never fit into to begin with.
Right.
And so a lot of this second devotional was written with younger me in mind, saying, okay, what would younger me had to have heard? You know, if I could talk to her right now, what would I say as somebody who's older, who's experienced more of life, who has now found a church that celebrates her for who she is, and everything that she can offer. You know, how can I be encouraging to that young woman who is so desperate to serve God, but has not the audience to receive, or recognize those gifts? And so I just wrote it from that place. And I really do love baptisms. I really, really love them. I love, especially when I'm in a church and people clap, like they celebrate this yeah. new member of their church, and they like whoop and holler and clap, and as if, you know, they're being, well, again, very symbolically, being born for the first time. And they're a part of this family that would, so coming full circle, becoming a part of this family. I find nothing brings me to tears more than a good baptism. Mm. And so then to see that again perverted in She-Ra, I was like, see, it's like this show is written for me. I know exactly what they're talking about.
Right.
Never having been involved with evangelicalism, I know exactly what they're talking about. And so I was so grateful for the level of storytelling that I just coming back to that episode, I was like, I've got to write about this. I've got to. So when they gave me an opportunity to write something, I was like, I've got just the thing. Hopefully this doesn't get too weird. Cause I ended up bringing in, you know, an Orthodox blessing from baptisms just out of a book that I had on hand, that really just clarifies, like, God loves humans so much. Like, that is not anything you can ever question. Like, yeah. when you are blessing the waters of a baptism, you can never question that God loves his people.
Yeah.
And to suggest that someone could lose God, yeah. well, is just unthinkable to me.
That's something that has been like, it's kind of always been a part of my faith. It's literally been like, what, like, oh my goodness, God actually cares about me. That's crazy. Like, that's what birthed faith out of me.
Right.
But what's kind of been happening in this season, oddly enough, with this series of Bard and Bible, like, thank you, patrons, for suggesting that I do this ridiculous walk through Genesis. Because now that as my hermeneutical framework of this story-based framework that I've given myself that over the years of doing this, I'm taking it to bear on Genesis. I'm just seeing, like, I've always been like that. Yes, yes, God is pretty harsh in the Old Testament and pretty, you know, gracious in the New Testament. And I go, no, man, have you ever really thought about what God's doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about this from God's perspective? Like, doing the creation story and the fall and being like asking the question of, why is God asking these questions? God knows the answer to these questions already. He's asking them because he's giving them a shot to say, sorry, God, I screwed up.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that if they had said, man, God, we really screwed up here, he'd go like, all right, I'll fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But God being God and people being people, we all knew how that was going to end. But like, seeing over and over again these stories of even the hardest stuff, even the stuff that I've spent so much of my faith going, God, what the heck is this doing in my Bible?
Yeah.
When you stop seeing it as, what application do I draw from this? Which that's been, I'm literally in another life when I have time to write things. I literally like have an outline for a book on how screwed up seeing the Bible and pulling from the Bible as what application can I draw from this? Not because application is bad. We literally just said it's important in the, earlier in this podcast. But the idea that when we read it with the goal of what application do I draw from this, as opposed to saying, what is God telling me about him and about me?
Mm-hmm.
Man, when you do that, when you say, God, what are you telling me about yourself in this? A lot of those harder stories become very much an understandable concept because of the fact that it's like, I'm trying to tell you who I am and who you are. And I'm not giving you 3 points, a poem and a prayer. I'm trying to literally welcome you into this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So take off your shoes and join me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly it. When I, our current priest, when she described, you know, the moment of justification being your baptism and then everything else being a journeying, a quest for God, and not in the sense of you don't know where he is, but in the sense of growing into deeper intimacy and deeper familiarity with God, I felt like my shoulders finally untensed after like decades of carrying the thought that I could ever screw up in just such a way, not even like particularly dramatically, but in just such a way where it's the straw that breaks God's back somehow.
Yeah.
You know, and so to be able to think of God as sort of like almost in like the last unicorn terms, where it's like so magnificent and so beautiful. And every time you're in his presence, you can't help but just like, just be awestruck, and pursuant, constantly pursuant. That completely flipped the script for me as to how I comport myself. Not so much in a, hey God, please don't hate me today, but in a sense of like, this is an adventure. What you got for me? What are we doing? Who are we talking to? Who are we going to love on today? And not in like a weird, like sort of woo-woo way, but sort of like just a very excited, sort of like, you love people, I'm going to love people. I'm an introvert, so I'm going to screw this up sometimes, but I'm going to love people.
It's so interesting to me, just the number of ways that God demonstrates how he loves us through these stories. Like, man, like I said, really putting myself into the Genesis is revealing so much more and so much more interesting aspects of who God is. Like, I love the fact that I don't know if you listened to it, the one I did about the Tower of Babel.
Yes.
Where I was like, this line has to be sarcasm.
Hmm.
Because if it's not, then it's God saying these people are too powerful and I have to put them down.
Right. Exactly.
And me, because again, when you go for application, you look over that line, cause it's not the line about don't be so proud that, you know, that you put yourself before God. That's the application that everybody runs through. I'm like, did anybody stop and think about what God said here?
Right, exactly. Oh no, they stack some blocks together. What am I gonna do?
He just flooded the earth, and now he's telling these people who are literally saying we don't need God and we're gonna go invade his house that they're just gonna get a language lesson. I don't. But again, it's really entering into what these things are about, and that allows us to have a lot more. Play and a lot more knowledge of who God is, because I think the more we know God, the more that, and this, if every once in a while I'll say things, and we've had this conversation in Slack, every once in a while I say things on this podcast and I think this is going to be the thing that's going to get me hate mail. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But if there's going to be one in this episode, it's this: the more we learn about who God is and how he acts and how much he loves us, the more we don't let our theology divide and conquer us as people.
Yeah.
Because man, do I have a lot more respect for the concept that theology is man-made. Because for a long time I was taught that it's God. And it's not. It is mankind trying to comprehend God.
Right.
And thus, because we are foolish creatures, even at our best, there is still foolishness in there.
Right. Well, that's why I always find it really funny when people say, like, they're Wesleyan, they're Lutheran, they're Calvinist. I'm like, I don't think any of those three guys would be cool with you creating whole denominations based off of what they said. Right. I think they had a little more humility than that. I don't even think Luther meant to create Lutheranism. I think he just wanted to correct Catholicism.
Right. Oh, Luther had some pride issues, but...
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, like, you're talking to somebody who really loves the study of theology, but primarily because I like a specificity of language. And if I want to be God-honoring about the way that I talk about God, I want to be thinking through the language that I'm using and what the implications of those words are. But you're right. Like, the further up and further in that you go, the more you have to develop that language, cooperatively as opposed to sort of singularly, as if you hold the keys to the kingdom, which none of us do.
Right. I have a horrible time memorizing scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of what the building blocks that God used to help me build this, the hermeneutic that I, he goes, yeah, Mike, I completely understand that you're rubbish at this. Let's focus on the stories. Because after a while, I started realizing that we fall because we proof text, but I'm miserable at proof texting because I don't remember the exact words. But there's a passage that's basically that says, as far as it goes for you, live at peace with all men.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember exactly where it is. I can't remember if that's exactly the wording. But so much of that rings true to me because of the fact that it – like. So much of what we end up doing is making these structures and you're with me and we're going to do this and we have to go against that.
Mm-hmm.
And God's like, look, man, there's going to be problems. There's going to be people who come at you and I'm, you know, you can't stop that. But as far as you're
concerned, you can't stop the beat. Sorry. Yeah. That's the first thing that came to mind.
But you can't like I actually developed a mantra that we use in our leadership a lot.
Yeah.
Which is, you can't control how somebody reacts to you, only how you react to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I built it off of that concept.
Yeah.
The idea that somebody will be mad at you at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Your responsibility is to not be mad back at them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we've been good at that. And sometimes I've had to have chats.
Yeah.
But again, it's.
No, I hear that. I think for me, it's been a process of acknowledging that my feelings are valid, but the choice that I have is how I manifest those feelings or
exactly.
What I do with those feelings. So not feeling disempowered in the sense that I allow for someone to tell me what I feel or whether I feel, but rather taking responsibility for my actions in light of those feelings.
Right.
And you know, how I mitigate them.
And appreciating the fact that their feelings don't come from nowhere either.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly.
Which again,
exactly
when we tie it back to the She-Ra thing, there's a chip and there's horribleness and
yeah. Yeah.
There's no choice there.
Right. Well, and that's actually, I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I'm getting ready to do a training. But when I taught communications, there was a communications model that I used where you basically had, because a lot of people, when they think of communication, they think of a give and take, just like two singular entities in conversation with one another. When really it's much more complex than that. You've got a message that you've encoded. It goes through it goes through a medium, a source of some sort, and then it's decoded by the person that is receiving your message. And then they give you feedback. But on all those three things, you know, the person speaking, the person receiving, and then the medium that it's that's being transferred through, those are all experiencing various levels of noise.
Yep.
So external forces that are influencing that message, despite your best efforts to decode and encode the message. Yep. So I'm dealing with my own noise, whether it's anxiety is high that day, or I've had a, you know, a rough day, traffic was bad, whatever. That's gonna color how I comport myself. Same with the person receiving it. They're going to be going through their own day, and I might not be aware of the noise that they're dealing with. But what I can do is be gracious when their feedback manifests itself in a way that is difficult for me to receive. And the more I understand that, the more Christ-like I think I'm going to actually stand to be towards other people.
Well, this has been amazing. Super excited for this. Again, Ashley, I feel bad because I've got James and Shanine coming after this, and y'all again setting the bar real high. but I do want to thank you for this. It's been great. I'm super glad we can bring this to the people. Super glad that we can support our friends at Mythos and Inc. as
yeah.
That includes your words. And again, I think if there's anything that I want to have kind of as the theme underneath all of these, it's the idea that these things are always there if you're looking for them. It's not that anybody who contributed to this one, anybody who contributed to the first volume, anybody who might contribute to future volumes has some kind of secret hidden nerd knowledge. This stuff is all there if you look for it. And heck, we've been talking for an hour about two devotionals that are a couple pages each.
It's amazing.
So,
won't God do it?
Yeah. So there is so much that is available if you're just willing to open your eyes and to really just seek God in this stuff. If God is everywhere, you can find him everywhere. Mm. And so, yeah, Ashley, before we leave, just give the people all the ways they can find you in case they don't know.
Yeah. So, frankly, if you're lazy, you can just Google my name, Ashley Mowers, and I'm very online, much to, I think, many people's chagrin.
Yeah.
But on Twitter, you can find me at DDK, so DEEDEE underscore K. For the podcast, on all platforms, you can find us at MinMax Pod. So MinMax Pod is everything from @gmail.com to our Reddit and Twitter and Instagram, etc. I'm trying to think of other things I'm involved in, and now it's all just come crashing together at the same time. since you wrote that intro, and I'm like, wow, what else have I done that I've not been promoting well?
That's just the stuff you did with me. The stuff in my intro is literally just the stuff you did with me.
But frankly, if you've the platforms that I'm on the most frequently, because social media is my job, so I try to limit my own personal lately. Twitter and Instagram are really easy ways to hit me up. So send me a DM. I will always respond if you're chill. And I'd love to talk to any of you. So, you know, on Instagram, you'll just find me at Ashley Mowers. But on Twitter, you'll find me at DEEDEE underscore K. And I'd love to share all the nerdy things with you.
Alrighty. Well, like I said, you can expect the next actual regular Barton Bible coming out pretty soon. It was originally going to be this week, but then life happened. So it should be coming out the beginning of next week for patrons, and then middle of next week for everybody else. And again, we will see you next time here at the Barton Bible.
Woohoo!